Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It is the first Anfield Wrap of the season proper. Liverpool go to Chelsea and draw 1-1. It's our first one hosted by Sports Social. And it is also our first one where we are partnering brilliantly with Green King. Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Liverpool fixture across the course of the 23-24 season. And they've got 900 sports pubs across the UK. It doesn't matter where you are. Based in the United Kingdom, you'll be able to catch every minute of the Reds over the course of the campaign, other games as well, because other football does matter. And throughout the season, we, in conjunction with Green King, will be announcing events and bits and pieces, content and competitions and so on, that put you closer to the action across this. But we just want to say thank you very much to Green King Sport for partnering with us over the course of the year. You'll hear more about that as we go. Here I have got Neil Jones, I've got Harriet Pryor, and I've got Andy McCann, and we will start on Chelsea versus Liverpool. Inevitably, the transfer market will rear its head. But Neil Jones, it was a good game, and I really want to sort of start on that, because I feel as though it's a game that, no matter what you think about Liverpool, or for that matter to an extent Chelsea, afterwards you can probably find something that supports your opinion of what they either should do, or what's wrong, or what's good. But I just want to start with the idea. It was a really good game of football, I thought, by two good sides, both of whom I expect to finish in the top six.
Yeah, I watched Match of the Day 2 late last night and heard the commentator, I think it was Guy Mowbray, say, if only all Premier League games were like this, two teams just going at each other. And it was like that, wasn't it? You know, you think about the two games last season between the two sides, and it was night and day, wasn't it, in terms of, you knew straight away, first 5 minutes, that's not finishing 0-0 this one. I'd have been surprised if it had finished 1-1, to be fair, in that point. But I think it's interesting, because I was on a show late last week and we said, if you give Liverpool a draw now, and a lot of Liverpool fans a draw, they take that. But I don't think there's ever a real draw that people are happy with, almost. Unless it's sort of, you've nicked one in the 90th minute and got an equaliser, a bit like the Daniel Sturridge game. I don't think anyone's ever happy after the draw. It's always like, we had that ahead, or we could have won that at the end, or we could have, you know, we can't give up too many chances and that kind of thing. But I actually thought, generally, it's a decent result for Liverpool, and I don't think it was a terrible performance either. I actually think it was quite a good performance in patches. There's weaknesses, but you have to also remember that Chelsea have got a good manager. They were at home. They've got a new sort of vibe about the club. They've got a few new signings. They've got a lot of expensive players, experienced players. You're asking a lot if you think you're going to go in there and sort of win. And I heard someone on the radio this morning, I think it was Nigel Riococca, saying Liverpool should be going there and winning easily. And I don't think I've, in all the time I've watched Liverpool, I can't remember the last time they went to Stamford Bridge and won easily in any guys in Chelsea with any manager, Liverpool with any manager. So I think that's a bit, you know, there's a bit
I think the idea of that, you know, not least because of the money spent, and there's obviously the Caicedo thing, but there's other bits and pieces. I think the idea that you go into Chelsea and you're rocking up and they're a gang of idiots who don't know how to play footy, which was a bit, and there was some of that was coming from Liverpool supporters as well. And I did feel a little bit like, you know, I feel as though we'll go there and we'll have better players. And I think that we did have a lot of players, certainly in the attacking sense, who I think are superior to the Chelsea alternatives. But they're built in this way there, where there's this back seven. The two fullbacks are really good players. Fernandez was the business, both, yeah. And he is the business. It's worth pointing that out. You know, and then you're looking at the, there's good centre-backs there. There's one Liverpool might have paid up to 60 million quid for playing for. When you begin to go through it and break it down, Neil, it's like, you can have a chat about whether or not you feel as though they've got enough cutting edge Chelsea. But what that meant was, they had a great way of building the play across those seven, and they could look after the ball really well.
Yeah, and they've got players who, you know, in individual moments are big, aren't they? They've got Thiago Silva, who, you know, when Darwin threatened to break, you know, knew exactly what to do. They had, you know, Raheem Sterling, who's been one of the best players in the Premier League for a number of years, who, he is dangerous.
And he's clever.
He's clever, he's strong, you know, he knows how to exploit gaps. You've got two excellent wing-backs, like you say. So, yeah, there's not, you know, I think the issue with that you would have liked to see Liverpool do is really put it on their chin and say, okay, how's your good vibes when it's 2-0?
Yeah. You know,
let's get from 1-0 to 2-0. How's your new dawn now? But they never did it. And okay, that might happen. They didn't win when they went for the quadruple. I don't think they won away at Chelsea. I don't think they beat Chelsea or City in any of the games they played. The four, I think they drew all of them. They might have drawn both of them with Tottenham as well in that season. So
yeah.
it's not the end of the world if you don't beat one of the sort of the big traditional rivals. But I think sort of the frustration is that I think from that first 20 minutes, I think you thought Liverpool had a good chance of doing it.
The game's in chunks, Harriet. You know, 0-25, I think, is a period. 25-75 is a period, although there is the 10 minutes after half-time where, Liverpool ends with the contentious penalty. And then 75 to close is a separate period. But 0-25, as Neil Jones says, it does feel as though Liverpool, they could really have done with turning that one goal into two.
Liverpool looked like a team that had pretty much only attacking options on the pitch in that first 25 minutes. And that's maybe why I feel like some fans are coming away from that thinking, we set up so attackingly, so offensively. Why didn't we just push in that first half an hour and get that second goal and then really make Chelsea consider their options? And then it kind of swung the other way. I don't know if you put it in there with all your chunks of time, but I thought 35 to 45, Chelsea were far on top.
Like that
period before half time, I was thinking, if we don't concede a goal here, like I was just wishing half time because it felt like they were so on top. It just, for me, it was like in that final period, they just figured us out a little bit. I would have maybe liked to make a change at half time. I felt like Gakpo never really got into the game in that position. There was maybe question marks whether he should have started, whether Jones should have started. The thing is, when I come to looking at it and I look at the starting 11, I really like all of those players individually. Like all of those players, I think, deserve a place in the starting 11. But for me, you saw in the first half an hour when it works, how it works. But then I think you saw a little bit in periods after that, how the balance is sometimes just a little bit off. I think you really recognise that yes, we can all talk about McAllister and we'll come on to individual performances. Thought he had a really good game, but does he provide that balance that you want from that role? Moving forward, obviously, we saw how quick we were kind of moving forward and in transition, and the attacking options we have and the talent we have in that area, incredible. And you see that in those really good periods. But then in the worst periods, you see how vulnerable we are when Chelsea counter quickly, when they get the ball in transition, when they're winning the ball back in dangerous areas. So I think you kind of see throughout the course of that game, all your opinions that you had going into the season were validated. Liverpool have incredible attacking options. You see that in those good periods, but also Liverpool need more in terms of a defensively solid number six, more defensive reinforcements in that back line as well. All the frailties you thought were there before the game, you could see as clear as day, but all the strengths as well, you could see clear as day.
Andy, one of the things I took from the game whilst watching it live, you know, first half, was the quality of both sides, the ability to move the ball 30 to 50 yards really quickly, whether that's through a carry or more accurately with players like McAllister for our goal is a good example. Trent Alexander-Arnold's a good example. Fernandez is inevitably a good example. The number of excellent 30-yard balls, not 70-yard raking passes, Xabi Alonso, Steven Gerrard, even Virgil van Dijk-like, but instead the idea of, no, this is how we just pop ourselves up here and now we've got the ball in this part of the pitch. I thought one of the things they work out is how Fernandez is going to find Sterling or James in attacking areas over and over again. They worked that out in that first half period and it makes a big difference. But you can say they work it out. The first thing I just want to say is the quality was breathtaking. The quality of those passes at times I thought was amongst the best I've ever seen, without sounding ridiculous. Just the idea you've just seen something go up a level in the game over and over again.
Yeah, there's a chance, isn't there, that it was like a game between two teams that need a number six. And obviously there's the one that both teams have been linked with and looks like he's going to Chelsea now. There's a chance in that type of game we both have number sixes and they're not that effective because the game is that quality with the you know, the progressive passing from like inside, just inside your own half or whatever. There's a game and a six gets bypassed and that. I'm sure Caicedo for either side would have made a difference, but when you've got players like McAllister, who, for me, he needs a number six quick so he can go and do what he's going to be doing a lot, slightly higher up the pitch, which makes us better defensively then, is when you've got people like him or Enzo who can just ping them 30, 40 yard, and then you've got clever players like Salah who'll drop in off the fullback to receive it, and then he's one-on-one with them. And once Salah or a Sterling is one-on-one with a fullback, it doesn't matter who he is, if they've got options in front of them. And I thought the big difference between the two sides going forward was we've got better quality in that, you know, that...
And more
quality in and around the forward lines, where Sterling was often getting it, doing what he should be doing, and then looking up and thinking, Jackson's not quite at the level, you know, where a Diaz is or a Jota, even though Jota didn't necessarily play yesterday. But the attacking talent on show for both sides was breathtaking.
The combinations as well between the players was something that really impressed me for an opening game of a season. I thought particularly McAllister, the way he linked up with the other midfielders, Szoboszlai, their little links up at times, it's a hard sentence to say. I mean, obviously Salah does that so well all the time, but I think every player yesterday just really looked like they were aware and had an understanding of where everyone else was on the pitch, and that's something for me that was really lacking towards the end of last season, that general kind of understanding of where everyone else is going to be, where to play the balls in. That for me is something that really impressed me yesterday and is what gives me confidence moving forward, that when we do have a bit of a better balance in the team, when we can pick out those passes and really play in that progressive way, it's going to be really exciting.
There's something for me, and this is back to the idea of the way it feels versus the way in which it necessarily is or isn't. So Liverpool are not going to play against Enzo Fernandez every week. So you've got to be really sort of clear about that. But it felt like it was just too easy for Chelsea to get into Liverpool's final third.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem for Liverpool was they didn't look after the ball well enough, in probably not in their own defensive third, in the sort of the pockets, if you want to call it that. You know, Jota was quite loose, wasn't he? Give a few away. I mean, they only had one shot on target in the game, even though, I mean, Salah had one block that was going in the bottom corner. Diaz had a header that was blocked with a hand that was probably going for the bottom corner in the second half. But they only had one shot, but they wasted a load of chances where you thought they're in. And they weren't in. You know, Salah miscontrolled one off the ball down the line, where Diaz had the whole penalty area to himself. Gakpo made a mess of one where he done brilliantly to sort of body Gallagher out the way, wasn't he? And then squared it to Salah. He ends up hitting the bar, but it's a better chance for Gakpo than it was for Salah. There was one really early where Jota plays it too wide for Diaz, where he's in and you think, oh, you're in. Liverpool do that a lot and in the game. And I think you've sort of almost accepted, and Liverpool did accept, that they were not going to have as much of the ball as they often do in games. You need to sort of be more precise with that. And I think this Liverpool team will be more precise in those moments. They've got better players now in those moments. They've got Szoboszlai, they've got McAllister, they've got Gakpo, who are really clean, sort of Manchester City sort of type players who, you know, you don't have to worry about their first touch. They're not sort of rushed. They're always a little bit controlled. But just yesterday, they didn't quite get it right. And I think that was the bigger problem for them. I think they were turning it over in areas where it was, A, oh, that was a chance. And then B, oh, God, now we've got to get back. You know. And I think that was where a lot of the trouble came from. Not necessarily Liverpool not, you know, being structured enough in terms of having strong enough players. I think Klopp said that in his thing. He said this, it had nothing to do with the characteristics of the midfield. He said we were too deep as a formation, which I didn't necessarily see live, but... I think it does look on a few clips that you see. Actually, I see what he means. There's two big gaps, basically. But I think that's okay. I mean, you know, Harry, it's right to say, you know, this team's going to score goals. It's going to create a lot of chances. It already did in the game. You know, if a little bit goes right, if McAllister gets that pass right at the end to Nunes, which most of the time he would, there's a very good chance to win the game. And, you know, I know Chelsea will have moments of their own, but... That's the point of a draw, isn't it? You both have moments.
It's interesting. I kind of asked this back to you, Neil. Do you think there's an acceptance this season that Liverpool might go into games and approach them where they don't feel they need to have as much of the ball, like their possession stats don't need to be as high because they don't want to leave themselves as vulnerable in counter-attacking situations? So if they just have the ball, like kind of not try and win it back in as dangerous areas, then and there's kind of an acceptance around that this season?
Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting how often they chose to allow Chelsea just to have it in that area. One of the problems with that, though, was that was allowing Chelsea to work out, right, this is where we get Fernandes on it, and now this is what he's going to do. And I think there's a fine line between that, between the idea of you wanted to make it harder, I felt, for them to get the ball into him at times. And I think Liverpool had sort of decided, because they didn't want to get caught out pushing, that they were going to allow him to have it, and not just him, but other players as well. And I think that that's a risk to allow, obviously, really good players to have it, because they'll begin to ask you questions that you find difficult to answer. But that said, again, one of the things that I think is really interesting in the game, Neil, is that, you know, well, we mentioned the excellence of Chelsea 25 to 75, but in a really weird way, they don't, they get the best chances, not necessarily when they've dominated possession, but more when they hit Liverpool on the break. They still, the chances still come when Liverpool are in transition.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, Chilwell had one, didn't he, where they switched it nicely from Liverpool's left to Liverpool's right. I think if his touch is right, he scores. He's got a very good chance of scoring. He doesn't get his touch right. Jackson had one, didn't he? Where I was quite impressed by Jackson. I thought he had a good game. You know, and he was a handful, wasn't he? And I actually thought it was one of them weird scenarios where the centre backs did quite well against him, and he did quite well against the centre backs. You know, I wouldn't have looked and said, "Oh, Canate's had him off all game there." Yeah. I wouldn't have looked and said, "Oh, he's given them nightmares." I just thought it was a good battle, and for a young lad on his debut, I thought he'd done quite well. Yeah, I mean Chelsea. I watched the Sky highlights this morning, and it felt like it presented it as Chelsea had all of the chances. And I thought, well, you know, Van Dijk went close with one. Salah at the bar. Salah had one blocked on the goal line. They could have had a penalty. Darwin had one deflected just wide. They should have picked out. They both had a goal. I thought it was quite an even in terms of chance. And I think the XG, you know, without going in too deep into it, I think it was quite similar. I think it was probably 2-2 around that in XG. So I thought Chelsea dominated the sort of the making of the game, if you like. They were sort of more, you know, they looked more in control of the game, but I didn't feel like it was sort of Liverpool absolutely hanging on, apart from that sort of period just before half time and probably just after the hour mark until they made the changes.
I think the idea of hanging on, I think, is interesting in it, Andy, for me, because firstly there's a couple of things I'll say again. You know, Chelsea are just an attacker light. Part of why they're able to make the game is because they've got one more defender / midfielder on the pitch at all times. They've got one more available for the pass. You know, there's unbelievable centre-back passing numbers for Chelsea, but there's three of them and a goalkeeper who's good with his feet. So the ball's just circulating there all the time, and Liverpool are letting them. But I think the other thing that's interesting is, I think it's 65, and I think where the expected goal stuff was striking to me, having a little look, was Chelsea didn't have a shot after the 70th minute. I think they really run out of gas there, and Liverpool's changes, I think, help shut the game down, whether or not it makes Liverpool more creative. I think Liverpool shut the game down quite well and sort of say, no, you know what, we're all done here.
Yeah, I think control was the word that was getting banded about in the boozer yesterday. Is Jones comes on and he maybe takes away a goal threat slightly, but he just gives you a bit more control. And there's times when, you know, I know most of us are fans of him, that is sometimes he chews it a bit too much and you think and release it. But I think he needed to do that yesterday. He's come on and he's quietly kind of killed the game a little bit and then let us grow into it. And I know you've got Robertson, once Jones had come on, kind of started getting more forward. But just picking up on Harriet's point before, I think, like some of the Twitter heads get, you know, we should be going there and winning the Renusa. In that season when we won the league, you have difficult moments in every game. There's the amount of 1-0s we had in that championship season, but you could have been 1-0 down after 30 minutes away at any side in the league. You're never going to get to go somewhere like that.
I was impressed with that we suffered. I think both centre-halves play well. Come on to individual performances, but we suffer well, I thought, Andy. Yeah. It's hard, but I think last season we'd have broke. We didn't break is the big thing for me.
No, definitely. And you're going to have to suffer, especially at venues like Stamford Bridge. You're always going to have to suffer. You're going to have to go through moments where the striker misses a chance that you'd expect them to score. But it's about how you react. And I thought the two centre-halves played really well yesterday.
Great stuff from Harriet, Neil and Andy. We'll be back in a minute or two with more on individual performances.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The two centre-halves do play really well, Neil, and I want to get on to individual performances around it because they play well. I think everyone, it's a funny thing, you know, I read your match ratings and I think it's a funny thing where you feel as though, possible exception of Jota and Gakpo, everyone else who started the game, I think, acquitted themselves really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, and even Gakpo, it was more he didn't get the ball a lot. You know, I think I looked at half-time, I think he had 9 passes in the first half, and obviously he's playing in the middle of the pitch. You'd expect more. I know it wasn't a game where Liverpool had an awful lot of the ball, but Gakpo's good enough to get on it and make a difference. He faded, didn't he? I think all of the attackers who started the game faded quickly in the second half or certainly drifted from view. And I know Salah made sure he was very much in view when he was taken off. But I think there was I thought Konate played well. I thought he started the game well, and he competed and did everything that you'd want him to do. In the game, he wasn't rash. He wasn't.
He looked up a level from his preseason performances.
Yeah, I agree. I think Van Dijk the same.
Yeah.
You know, I think Van Dijk, he's still the best in the world. Heading in his own boxes, and he's still the one who, if someone said, listen, if the right player gets his head on this, you know, everything's great. You know, it's going to be Van Dijk, don't you? He'd the one I'd pick out of anyone to go and win a ball for you in the penalty area. I thought Robertson, he had a tough time. But I don't think it was necessarily him playing badly. I think it was him sort of having his work cut out with, you know, two good players up against him and not much protection from in front, you know, be it Diaz or be it the left-sided midfield player. I thought he was brilliant in the last half hour of the game. I thought he really stepped up and came into his own, showed, you know, a bit of courage and a bit of leadership. The goalkeeper, obviously, is excellent, isn't he? I had a little bit of sort of dissent, if you want to call it that, from people who I know about Szoboszlai. I thought he was brilliant.
I thought he was great.
I thought he was excellent. I thought he looked. I looked at it and thought that's a good sign, and that was my takeaway from it. I thought he's big, he's strong, got about for 90 minutes. I wish he did that one at the end when it dropped to him. I thought, come on, go and sort of win the game at the end. He probably did the right thing in terms of trying to pass it, but I want him to sort of really back himself there.
Also, it's all right if he doesn't stand out. Like, I think our midfielders stood out sometimes for the wrong reasons last season. It's all right if he just puts in just a solid performance and eases his way into the
Liverpool side. Isn't it nice to see two players there, well, three really. Gakpo, he didn't really do it, but players who, the ball goes into him, you think, oh, you're under pressure, and he just turns it around the corner and you go, actually, we're out there. Look, lovely. And, you know, the goal's a good example, isn't it? The goalkeeper plays one into someone without, you know, I'm not being cruel on Jordan Henderson, but that's getting turned probably, you know, over his shoulder out of play, you know, maybe, or straight back to the goalkeeper. This is a pass and a bit of courage on the ball. I was pleased by them. You know, Diaz didn't do a great deal after he scored, but that's great, isn't it, to see him doing that? We were talking
it's
about
the thing
the show
you want him doing. Yeah,
he's like, got to get them Sadio Mane goals.
And he is.
It was a very Sadio Mane goal, wasn't it? You know, even the fact that he was sliding in was sort of a bit Mane-esque.
Yeah,
but he's got to be there to do that.
I was delighted with it.
Absolutely. You know, Jota will play better. You know, he was still a nuisance enough, especially in the early part of the game. He can play better. Gakpo can play better. Salah can play better. But, you know, I think generally there was nobody that you went, oh, that's a problem. That's a huge problem individually.
And that's why it's interesting, Harry, to come back to the system question, therefore, because we're sitting here and I feel as though also Elliot, I thought, came off the bench, made a real difference. We've talked about Curtis Jones as well. And this is what Liverpool do need to still think about or engage with is, do you feel as though that's the right approach to be taken at a ground like Stamford Bridge? Now, you know, recruitment comes into that. But for me, I do just sort of go back to, we're saying all of this, but we're also saying our centre-halves have a lot to do. We were troubled in these areas. Robertson was put under pressure, but we're simultaneously saying that these players played well.
Yeah, if you're talking about every single player on the pitch putting in a solid and consistent performance and yet you still haven't come away and felt like you were totally dominant for large parts of the game, then I think that does raise questions with the system. And for me, the biggest question mark does fall to the two players, and that's Konate and Robertson. If you look at Konate's heat map from yesterday, the ground that he had to cover from the right-hand side of defence, obviously, and then shifting into the full-back position and then even into midfield at times when Liverpool were pressing higher. He has so much ground to cover, and I think he does so well, by the way, yesterday, but it does still raise questions of whether we should be asking that much, whether it's reasonable to ask that much over a 38-game season. When he drops out, who is going to step in and do that? Because I don't think any of the backup options we currently have will be capable of doing that and covering the ground that he does, because he's got the recovery pace and the other attributes to make it work. And then Robertson as well is the same question we've been talking about in pre-season and the end of last season. Is it getting the best out of him? Is it allowing him to do what he does best? Do we need someone who's a little bit more of an out-and-out left-sided defender in that position if we're going with a three at the back? I think those are all valid concerns. I think you see in very obvious periods of the game yesterday where they do cause us issues and where it does feel like one ball in behind, like in pre-season we spoke about so much, does cause Liverpool problems. I don't want to be talking about the goalkeeper being man of the match. I don't want that situation again where he is having to sometimes step up. Obviously, we're incredibly lucky that we have him and that he is that good. But I just would like him to have that little bit more protection. And in the current system with the current players, excluding recruitment, because if we bring a solid defensive midfielder in, this conversation all changes. But with the current system and the current set of players, I think it does leave far too many vulnerabilities open.
Do you think? So I'll ask you this: do you think if they did bring any defensive midfielder in, it all changes, Andy? Because that's the thing I still remain sceptical of. Mm. I think it can improve, and I'm fine with this in a way that it's back to my idea. I think we're building this a lot of this towards results against the bottom 10, home and away. I think we're trying to do something that's a little bit different. And I'm fine with it up to a point, but I don't think one player even if you, for instance, had a more traditionally sort of left-hand-sided centre-half option ahead of Robertson, which is the other thing people are talking about, I don't think it changes. I think it can improve matters possibly off the ball, but I don't think it changes everything, because I think Liverpool, to use the old Benitez blanket metaphor, Liverpool are putting their blanket in a very, very specific way here and saying, okay, you can get at us. Try and get at us, because we want to try and get at you the other way. I don't think everything just gets solved with a magic wand.
No, I think one of the reasons why he's implemented the system, just picking up what Harriet said, is I think he just backs the keeper. I think part of it is you will get chances, but I've got the best keeper in the world, so I'm kind of happy. I think that's a little bit. Pep probably gets City get attacked less because they're a bit more rounded than on any, and he's, you know, nothing comes through the left back attacking wise. Now he is very much gone with four units, and he, and one just steps into Stone steps into midfield. But I think one of the reasons why Klopp is happy trying it is he backs his keeper 100%, like I think we all do. And then the other one with the system for me is the six. I think the biggest difference we'll see when, or hopefully, a six comes in is we'll be more defensively structured, because the press in McAllister and Szoboszlai, McAllister will be 15 yards up, so the direct balls coming will be less, because McAllister will be doing that 15. Hopefully the six is a good player and he helps us in it, but I think just moving McAllister up 15, 20 yards will completely change how often we get.
Is that what you, were you surprised he didn't start Jones? Go on. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's not just about, because I think that's the perfect point, is it's not just about winning the ball, you know, that's the number one aim, but McAllister good at giving a foul away. Just that's it. You know, that's over that phase of play. You know, we're back in now. That's lovely. There wasn't enough of that yesterday. There was a couple where, you know, Gakpo got rolled maybe a couple of times, or, you know, Diaz is the wrong side, just trying to win it. But McAllister is, you can see streetwise in that regard. You know, Fernandez, the same. That they're both Argentine World Cup winners who made, you know, a big difference by doing things like that. They are good at that. And if McAllister is just a little bit deeper, trying to get on the ball, doing that, then it does, you know, you need someone else doing that. And I agree completely with Andy that will really help Liverpool's structure, just having the player in the position he was signed to play, really.
Yeah, it's too risky for him doing that in the positions he was in yesterday.
And he got done a couple of times.
Exactly, he did, yeah.
There was a moment where Gary Neville said, you know, and Gary Neville, but said, there you go, there's an example of why Liverpool needed a defensive midfielder, because it was Enzo Fernandez ran through, didn't he? But Liverpool blocked the chance well. You know, like it was well dealt with.
He just switched off.
But also, it was like Liverpool were aware of the situation. It wasn't a case of, oh my god, like, you know, that's completely gone wrong. So it's not as simple as, oh well, you know, Sofyan Amrabat would have just chased him into the box and saved the day. You know, Liverpool saved the day. They've got defenders for that, and they've got goalkeepers for that, or a goalkeeper at least for that. So I don't think it necessarily. You still want one because you want a bit more flexibility, and you want a bit more. You know, when you go into Brentford and they're putting it on you, you want someone to go and win headers off long throws, and you want someone to sort of sit in front and protect. But yeah, it doesn't mean that it's milk and honey as soon as you put AN other Lavia whoever in there.
Also, when we were playing the 4-3-3, though, we were still talking about the defensive vulnerabilities and the fact that Trent was pushing further forward. Like, there's never a perfect solution. I think the manager referenced this himself recently. He said, whatever system you play, there's going to be pros to it, but there's also going to be cons. And it's whether you take all the attacking impetus that this system gives us and the fact that it's going to allow us to create so many chances that hopefully we take, and you kind of just put up with the defensive frailties. However, I do think that having someone in there that is more of an out-and-out number six will alleviate some of those vulnerabilities. It won't solve them, it won't change everything, it won't be the total game changer, but it will mean that when Liverpool are exposed and more vulnerable, that they do have someone there who will just put in the last ditch tackle, who will be the last man standing, who will be able to sweep up some of those areas where I felt like there was gaping holes yesterday.
There's Chelsea, I've got to say it again, Andy, Chelsea are building it with this back seven. So there's the three centre-backs, then there's the two holders, and then there's the wing-backs on either side. Liverpool are building it with a back five. And that's one of the reasons I think Chelsea sort of retain possession better. For me, there's a bit of a happy medium here. You know, I'm not, again, to ask the system question. Liverpool could be 4-2-3-1 in these games. Neil wrote a really good piece this morning where he, for instance, said it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if it was Trent Alexander-Arnold and McAllister. And I think you can throw Thiago in there in the idea of a 4-2-3-1 at the base of a midfield. And then you've got a back six. That you're building it with a back six. So it's not seven. You've still got four attackers on the pitch. But I think I do feel as though there's a bit of a journey to that. And Liverpool have played that under Klopp. Even when they played 4-3-3, there was times when he played 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2 or whatever you want to say. I just think there is a little bit of, you know, I hope we see a bit more variance as the season wears on. I don't think he just has to play this way, especially away from home. I think he can flip it during games, and I think he actually does do that a little bit with 20 to go.
Yeah, I think the other option would be to stick with Trent at right back and just be more of a traditional right back, and then have McAllister and Thiago sitting together as a little base to build from. You could do that. I just wonder yesterday whether Klopp, you know, we spoke earlier about kind of letting them have the ball, whether it's been a pre-game plan to let them do it, or, you know, halfway, once they had that mad 10 minutes, didn't they, where, you know, they had this allowed goal, they had that chance that you just referenced where McAllister switched off for a second and they've got in. I wonder whether Klopp's watched that and thought they're literally building with a seven here and we've only got five that can press them. Lads, just let them out until it comes to a trigger point. You know, if you've ever coached, you have your trigger points where you then get involved or you engage. He's just gone, while it's there, you just kind of shoo them away or bring them into an area you want them. And then they've gone, okay, as soon as they engage us in this part, we then press them. Whether he's done that before the game or during, probably a little bit of both. But I think the 7v5 building has definitely had an impact on the way he played yesterday.
I think the trigger point was Conor Gallagher, wasn't it? I think it was basically, as soon as he's got it, take it off him. And they've done it quite well, didn't they? And I give him credit, you know.
I give him so much credit.
I don't rate him at all, or haven't, but I tell you what, he showed some character yesterday.
I'd have
been hauling him after 25 minutes if I'm the manager. I'm saying, you're out of your depth, mate, sorry. And I thought he was brilliant for them after that, or certainly for 45 minutes, he was brilliant.
I'm glad you said that. I think the same. I don't particularly rate him, and I think Liverpool clearly had a plan, and he shows some character that he stays in that
couple,
game.
There was a couple where it was like, I mean, he was off, wasn't he? If Salah gets a toe and he's sliding in, you think you've got to get that right, but he wanted the ball, he carried on doing it, so credit to him. But I think Liverpool definitely had him circled in the notebook of, you know, as soon as that ball goes in and he's got a bit of he's facing his own goal, or he's got a bit of time to sort of think, get into him and take it off him.
Thank you very much for listening to the Anfield Wrap. We'll be with you every single Monday now on Sports Social. It's a pleasure to be here. If you haven't thought of it already, do consider downloading our app. And on there, you can see all of our premium content. You can use tokens to explore that if you want to. Support the Anfield Wrap any way you can on YouTube as well. We'll be back in a second or two with more on transfers.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
Just sort of rounded it off, Harriet. Liverpool, they were worse, I'd argue, last season at Stamford Bridge. They could have got battered in the end. You know, that really was one where the goalkeeper was walking away MOM. Also, they were worse last season at Old Trafford. They were worse at the Amex. They were worse at the G-Tech in there as well. I've just realised that Amex and G-Tech are very, very corporate, aren't they? Back to back, maybe that's something to keep
an eye on. Which the G-Tech is?
Brentford. No water.
Is that true?
The no water G-Tech. That was the game was. Yeah, the game was. Delayed, wasn't it? Of course, the water issue. Yeah.
The general perception is that you have to win every game, and it sort of begins to destroy the notion of a decent point away. I'm going to bore people pulling this out all the way over the season, different examples of it, but I'm going to keep doing it. The 18-19 team, which is one of the all-time great Liverpool teams, that gets 97 points, only wins three away games against the top 10. They're not even good members of the top 10. If I remember rightly, they win at Leicester, Wolves and Tottenham that season, and they don't have hard lines in the other ones. They don't win either, apart from arguably City, where they get beat. They don't really have hard lines. They just basically get what they deserve. And I think my thing on this is that we've got to allow them a good point, especially at this stage of the season. We've got to find a way that it's all right. As Neil's saying before, you know, for me, if anything, if Chelsea have got real pretensions, and my God, they're throwing the money around as though they have, they've dropped two. They've still got to come to Anfield on the old head-to-head now. That's the way it's going to go. They dropped two, and I think it's important Liverpool and everyone connected just breathes in and out a little bit and says, well, it's better than it was last season at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I think this is where we slightly disagreed on the fact that it was a good first game of the season, because your argument was the fact that if you go there and you get a point, then it's a good point. But for me, it's like if that came after a win at home to Bournemouth and then you got another 3 points somewhere else and then you played Chelsea and you got a point away, you'd be looking at that thinking, yeah, that's really good. I think the difficulty now for a few fans coming off the back of it is like, okay, it's the start of the season. I wanted it to be kind of a new dawn, hit the ground running away from home. Our form last season was not good in that particularly bad period. We weren't picking up results. We weren't able to build anything or put together anything of a performance away from home. So I think that's why the nerves are still a little bit there. The trepidation is still a little bit there. But if you take it for what it is, and you reference all those things that I didn't have a clue that we only won three of the three away games against the top 10 in the season where we were absolutely incredible. So it doesn't worry me. I think there's a lot of positives to take from it. I just think we need to follow it up with a couple of really solid, good performances and getting the 3 points. And then hopefully in 10 games time, you can look back and think, okay, how good was that to start the season in that way? So yeah, I'm fine with it. Good point. I think we can all breathe in and breathe out.
On that, I've come in this morning and me and Andy were chatting before, and I said to him, is it a good point if you're chasing City? And he said, which I'm going to back him and hope it's true, Andy reckon City only won two of the 10 away games against what you would deem the Big Ten last year, which is mad. So that even adds more to the notion that it can be a decent point if they're only winning two. I know they got less points than they normally do, but...
So why do we have this perception then that you need to be picking up points in every single game to beat City? Like, why has that got into our heads that draws are just not acceptable? I don't understand
that. Because the memory of those seasons is not the first part of it, is it? It's the last part where it's 13 wins. And they win 13 games in a row, or they drop two in the last 70 points or whatever silly they do, you know. I think that's seared in people's minds. But there was a period in that 18-19 season where Liverpool was 7 points clear, I think, weren't they? Yep. Were they about to go 10 and they drew at Leicester at home?
Leicester at home,
and you
weather
know,
was mad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you know that's I think that's why that's the case. But we spoke last week myself, Andy, and you spoke last week on a show about. Just get City out of your head. Just stop worrying about them. You know, don't get the league out of your head for now. Just sort of grow
just
into
play
the season, play games, and start playing some good football, and get back, sort of enjoying it. You know, and I think it was hard because it didn't feel like a lot of people enjoyed it when they were right up the top. They certainly didn't enjoy it last season when they were out of the top four. But you've got to find a way to enjoy it, and I think this team can be enjoyable this season. I think it will be enjoyable.
I think a part of enjoying it, I think Neil, is allowing the idea that other teams are going to get to be good, like, and also enjoying being, but them being good if we can, you know. I'm looking at this going, I think there's 9 really good sides. I think if we allow the idea that we all think Brighton's coach is good and they get a lot right, so yeah. they're not going anywhere regardless of the departures. They score 4 at the weekend, could have been more. Newcastle put 5 past Villa, but we know Villa are tidy, got a good manager. You know, when you begin, and that's before you even got to the traditional big six. Mm. I'm looking at, you know, you're going down this, and I think that, and therefore as part of this, that's going to be that they are including us 9 tough aways. So for us, it's 8 tough aways because you don't play yourself, but we've got to worry about Goodison as well in there, which they don't necessarily. The average, obviously, such a different thing, Goodison, for us as it is for these other sides. And I just think, I think at some point we've got to get on with the idea of other teams are good, they've got some really good players, and they've got some really good managers, and therefore you're going to suffer. It's going to be hard sometimes. I tell you what, not getting beat on the road is never a bad thing,
definitely, and against Chelsea as well. So, and that's the other thing, isn't it? That mini league becomes bigger and bigger, doesn't it? It doesn't become sort of, oh, you know, it's going to come down to the 2 games against City, or it's going to come down to your sort of your away form against the top 6. It's now it's like, well, do you know what? Man United can easily lose there. Newcastle could easily lose at Stamford Bridge. So if you want to do that thing where you say, oh, you put the results next to each other, you say, well, we might be 1-0 up on a few teams here who are rivals. The key thing is obviously go and win Saturday. Make sure you don't wet the bed on that one. Yeah. Make sure I think they'll have a chance of having a good go at Newcastle. They beat them twice last season. I think, you know, it's going to be a raucous St James's Park, and if they get on top, then great. But I think Liverpool can cause them problems. So if you go out of there, if you get out of Dodge with a win or a draw, you're suddenly looking at 5-7 points from the first 3 games and going, do you know what, we've got 2 tough aways out the way. We're in business here.
And that matters.
And Newcastle games had a bit of added spice in it because Klopp's gone at them in his press conference, hasn't he?
Yeah.
At the assistant. And I think, you know, the rumour is they'll be putting that up in the changes and that. Right. What's his name?
Jason Tindall.
Yeah, he's kind of gone at him in a press conference.
I think that there was a lot of needle last year between the two, wasn't it? Especially at Anfield. I mean, I always say this, it was a game in August. I've never seen Anfield angrier than that sort of. And they won. People walking out to me and just going, you better write that there, the worst time wasting team I've ever seen at Nick Pope's.
It was the most frustrating game, I think. Yeah. Like, and I know we won in the end, but I literally remember how frustrated I was sitting through that. It was
bitty, should we call it?
Yeah. Was it Carvalho, winner?
Carvalho, yeah.
Very late one, yeah.
Yeah, Joe Gomez wins the header.
All those teams are in and around the top 6 or even the top 10 have strengthened so much over summer as well. And that's why you can come away from Chelsea where they have strength and where they have got a new manager who is going to go on to probably do really great things with that team. And they've brought in players, they've shifted out players, they've trimmed the squad. They've done everything they need to do over summer. And so I think when they start developing more as the season goes on, you take that even more as a good point. Probably a little bit scarred by the last season where they finished, what, 11th? Did they finish 11th
12th,
last season? 12th.
Chelsea, yeah.
So that's why maybe a few of us are like, well, is it going to be a good point? But they're obviously going to be a lot better than that this season. They should be challenging in the top 6-4 again. So we'll take it.
He's a really good manager.
Really good manager.
Yeah, I love his face. He's got a great face, hasn't he? He's got such a
nice demeanour, you know.
Love, good suit, good demeanour, yeah. Good chap. I like him. I genuinely.
He's had Klopp likes him as well, can't
yeah,
he?
Oh, yeah.
That was a warm hug.
It was
at the end,
yeah.
But also at the end, I thought there was like a bit of a moment between the two of them. Like, tell you what, that was a game of footy.
Yeah.
And no mistake. No, I like him a great deal. And yeah, go from there. But he's got Moises Caicedo, Andy McCann. And that is a real blow. Felt like Liverpool were going as far as they would go for Lavia, and now they've decided no, they can go further, which undermines Liverpool's notion of their relationship with value. I thought they'd be more likely to double down on that, but if they are prepared to go for Lavia, but there's still a chance they miss out on him because he chooses Chelsea, which at this point wouldn't be unreasonable if the footballer and the people around him feel as though he's very much been second choice as far as Liverpool are concerned.
Yeah, it feels like Liverpool and Chelsea have gone into a battle for two players, and the opposition teams who are selling them have been the two real winners, because we're potentially going to end up overpaying for Lavia, or Chelsea will. And then obviously it looks like Chelsea have had to pay an extra 10-15 for Caicedo. Yeah, to blow, he's gone. I think listening to all the shows and that, I woke up to the news, the feed, it had been agreed. But as I've read, I maybe never got sucked in by it as much as anyone could. As I've read everyone's tweet, it was all very much the clubs. There was no mention of the player. And you know, you often see in tweets or in social media up to date, you know, things like personal terms won't be a problem, basically saying they've already been.
There was, though, in David Ornstein's original piece,
he
did say it was seen as a formality, yeah, which, I mean, Someone must have said that, mustn't he? Someone's give that away.
I'm glad I missed that one. Yeah,
that was the original. Was that the 4 a.m. or 3 a.m?
It was middle of the night, wasn't it? 3-4 a.m.
Yeah. Transfers don't sleep.
Because me and Neil was on WhatsApp at 5:45, I reckon.
Yeah.
New record.
Yeah, only me, you and Gutman were awake of everyone at that point.
But even Klopp's confidence for me was I was thinking this is a bit moody. I don't think this is anywhere near as done as everyone's thinking. And, you know.
I'm so surprised he didn't comment on it because I feel like normally if it's not 100% done, they just won't pass comment. But he did say there was agreement between the two teams and then did acknowledge the personal terms and everything. But it was a strange day, wasn't it? Yeah. Very strange day.
It was a strange day. Harry carried it on live television on behalf of us all, which is very good of her. Neil, there is with it. As I say, I'm surprised Lavia is come back in terms of Liverpool making a really heavy offer because they could have made that heavy offer 3 weeks ago go from there. And I think that, you know, if they're going to talk about the fact that value is what matters to them the most, what they can't do is show weakness around this. I would genuinely argue. I understand that they do need a footballer or maybe even two to come in. Sangare at PSV is being mentioned. I think Trindade hasn't gone anywhere, but I don't think he's going anywhere literally practically whilst they're still in the Libertadores, which I don't think is unreasonable, by the way. Liverpool should not get to bully Fluminense or anything like that. You know, they've got their own sporting ambitions. I think Paulinho's fitter than presumed. I think Fulham have been training him in the dark or something. Tyler Adams isn't fitter than presumed, but he's got a 20 million release clause, Neil. You know, I think there's all the names in the frame beyond Lavia if Lavia doesn't work out for them.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool have been briefing that really this summer, haven't you? You know, whether it's a genuine sort of thing or more of a, you know, a sort of a message to Southampton that they don't mess about too much. You know, it's not just you, but Liverpool have been saying that. I look at those names. Paulinho for me doesn't make sense for Liverpool in what they've done. He's 28 and you're looking at a big fee. Obviously one has been mentioned, Decore from Crystal Palace. You're sort of looking at him and saying, okay, that's a lot of money, but there's a player who is a defensive midfielder, who has played in the Premier League, who is young, sort of bit of upside to him. Okay, and he's available now, as in to play. Like, could he be one? Tyler Adams, I think he's a good player. He's got a pretty checkered injury history, and
absolutely,
you know, 20 million. Okay, you might say that's a little gamble you might be able to take, but yeah, I'd be really worried about Liverpool buying an injury-prone player when there's so much problems. Sangare. Been linked before, hasn't he? And I know Liverpool were expecting him to go in January, and hence why they were in for Gakpo so early in that market. They were thinking, okay, they're going to sell him and Madueke, and we're not going to be stuck for Gakpo. So I think Liverpool do see that there's a player that can play in the Premier League or a bigger club. I think I don't know about everyone else, but I do get the feeling that it is a little bit just like, do you know what? Whoever it is, Liverpool fans, I think will just sort of get behind at this moment in time, unless it's, you know, Naby Keita back on loan or James Milner back in. I think Liverpool fans will get behind it as long as it's sort of like, okay, just do it now. Like, let's just get our heads around what the season's going to look like, because it's not been a great summer for them, has it? It started off quite well. It's been a pretty bad month in terms of the slowness of the progress, the sort of scattergun approach a little bit, the fact that they've all of a sudden they're in for Caicedo, having sort of been nowhere for them. Now it's, we didn't want to play more than 35 for Lavia. Now it's going to be up to 50 plus, up towards 60. It just feels a little bit un-Liverpool, doesn't it? And I think a lot of people are just like a little bit of clarity over how it's going to look.
Well, past what I'd like it is because I want them to crack on and do centre-backs.
I was going to suggest this. You brought it up about Trent. I mean, he gave that interview with Sturridge and Trent basically said, get me in midfield, didn't he? I mean, that was the way I read it. He said, you know, I'll be well up for it. I'd learn on the job, and when that decision comes, I'm game. Is there a right back? Is there a right back sort of addition, or a right sided centre back addition to be thought about? Is that a sort of let's have a go at that for this season and see where we're at? You know, it wouldn't be ideal, but if you got a really good right back in, possibly, you know, or you could get a right sided centre back and sort of commit to Robertson as your real attack minded left back. Who, you know, let's be fair, he's not a bad attacking fullback. I think they need to settle on something quickly, because at the moment it just looks a bit like they're throwing darts at the board.
Yeah, the thing for me is with the Caicedo versus Lavia thing is that I think there was an acceptance that if they bought Caicedo in, the work in midfield would be more or less done, whereas I think people feel that if they bring Lavia in, and it does look like it's getting increasingly more likely, that it will be Lavia plus one, and then are you thinking about defenders as well? Like, it still leaves a little bit of work to be done. Although there's only actually 16 or 17 appearance difference between Lavia and Caicedo. Like, a lot of people are speaking about Caicedo.
And Bajcetic isn't far behind.
Exactly, as well, yeah. A lot of people talking about Caicedo as this ready-made option. And obviously, he's been so impressive and he had such an impact at Brighton, and that's where a lot of that's coming from. But in terms of actual Premier League experience, the gap is not that vast, and the gap in fee does look to be vast, even though Liverpool probably are paying over the odds for what they wanted for this player. But yeah, Southampton and Brighton consistently the real winners in this transfer window. Brighton in every transfer window, I think, pretty much. But yeah, I think it would be Lavia plus one and then a defender, and I think that's why it still leaves quite a lot of work. I just quite liked it all to have been wrapped up at least a couple of weeks before the season started.
Obviously, just to let you in on something behind the curtain a little bit, but I asked Klopp on Friday. He did obviously an embargoed section of his press conference, and I was there for the Saturdays. And I sort of made my introduction to the question was, you know, they're two different types of player, and, you know, Caicedo's a lot more established. And Klopp said, no, he's not. Like, Klopp, that was his reaction was, well, not really. You know, he's a bit, a couple of years older, and he's played a few games more. I disagree with him. You know, Caicedo's played at the World Cup and has shone in the Premier League, whereas Lavia has shown glimpses in the Premier League. You know, Caicedo was nominated for Young Player of the Year, that kind of thing. But in terms of the, you know, being a sure thing, I think Caicedo is close to being a sure thing. But you could make the case that, 45 games in the Premier League, isn't it? Bajcetic has played 22, I think, in his career. It's not, you know, it's not sort of 115 million's worth, and Lavia, even less, I think, is worth 60 million.
But they do need a player.
Oh yeah. I think they need three players. If you're asking me,
three players that turns out in January for me, that's what I'd like to see them do.
Yeah. But I think they need one. Like, I was in now.
They need this one.
They need two. Pretty much, and I think ideally they need three, but, you know, we're all greedy.
Who do you want to hold in mid? You can pick one of any of the sort of known names, just to end us off, just for a laugh. No one's going to hunt you down and kill you.
Just based on what Neil's just said, obviously that's a little bit behind the curtain. The fact that Klopp's almost... Was that after Caicedo had started to go down?
Look, it's difficult because I can't start speaking about Caicedo and Lavia specifically because there's stuff going on, you know. But it was more like... It was more just an instant reaction to... My frame of the question was, have you changed... This is a change in plan. Have you gone after Caicedo because he's more established? And he said, well, it's not really. You know, like, it's a bit like there's still a project there type of thing.
But yeah, maybe that was just playing down his. But based on that, I'd just go Lavia. They've been in for them all for 6 weeks. I think just, you know, I'd like him in, yeah.
Okay, there we are. That's the McCann take. Do take it up with them if you don't like it. Maybe they will hunt you down and kill you, Andy. But, you know, I'll not feel responsible in any way, shape or form. Thank you very much indeed to Neil Jones. To Green King as well, our new partners. Very, very pleased to be partnering with them. Andy Heaton and Ash O'Rourke for producing. We've also had Harriet Pryor joining us, and Andy McCann, who is blameless for all these things. They buy. They're not going to listen to Andy. Don't worry about it. It was a good draw. It was a good point. We're going to have to get used to that, you know, because that's the way this league's going to be this season. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.